It's Lars Larson. Thanks for listening to my podcast and for listening to The Lars Larson Show. Are you approaching retirement, or maybe you've just changed jobs? If so, you'll probably now have control of your 401k or IRA. Would you like to buy some property, notes, loans, start a new business, or even buy crypto? You can with a self-directed IRA. For more than a decade, I've been telling you about setting up a self-directed IRA through IRA Advantage. And while you may now hear other companies say they offer self-directed IRAs, you need to find out if they're truly self-directed. With a truly self-directed retirement account, you can make any investment the law allows. Whether you're talking about true diversification, starting your new business, or investing in private holdings, IRA Advantage through a truly self-directed IRA can make that happen. Take it from me, Lars. You've worked hard for your money. IRA Advantage will work hard to keep it yours.
Would you like to learn more about truly self-directed IRAs? Then visit IRAAdvantage.com. View our videos and call IRA Advantage. That's IRAAdvantage.com.
Your approval rating in the country is well below 50%. And I wonder why you think that is.
This is a really difficult time. We're at an inflection point in the history of this country. We're going to make decisions, and we're making decisions now, that are going to determine what we're going to look like the next 10 years from now.
That is Joe Biden in a 60 Minutes interview aired last night, and this is the Lars Larson Show. Welcome to the best conversation in talk journalism, and you're certainly welcome to take part. If you want to join in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. And naysayers, you always go to the head of the line on this show at 866-439-5277. You can send emails. They all come right to me, not to anyone else. talk@LarsLarson.com, and it doesn't get much easier to remember than that. And if you want to vote in our Twitter poll, and I'll tell you the details on that in a moment, just go to @LarsLarsonShow on Twitter. And if you don't like Twitter, go to my website at LarsLarson.com. And welcome to the Radio Northwest Network, proudly serving the states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for the past 22 and a half years. And if I've got anything to say about it, another 22 years coming down the road. This is the first time that the president has actually sat down with an interview with a reporter asking questions in more than 200 days. Joe Biden rarely takes questions from reporters, and oftentimes he tells the reporters that he's not supposed to answer questions, that some mysterious they told him, don't take questions, you're not allowed to. Now, we're kind of left to wonder, who gives orders to the president of the United States anyway? And then when you watch the interview, you realize why his handlers do not put him in front of cameras or microphones very, very often. First of all, there's the matter of the Joe Biden economy, which at least to everybody I know is in trouble right now. Listen to this.
Mr. President, as you know, last Tuesday, the annual inflation rate came in at 8.3%. People are shocked by their grocery bills. What can you do better and faster?
Well, first of all, let's put this in perspective. Inflation rate month to month was just an inch, hardly at all.
You're not arguing that 8.3 is good news.
No, I'm not saying it is good news, but it was 8.2 or 8.2 before. I mean, it's not, I can make it sound like all of a sudden, my God, it went to 8.2%.
It's the highest inflation rate, Mr. President, in 40 years.
I got that. But guess what we are? We're in a position where for the last several months, it hasn't spiked. It has just barely, it's been basically even.
It's been basically even at 8.5%, Mr. President. How about this for perspective? Inflation is growing at the highest rate it has in 40 years. It began over a year ago in the summer of last year, the first 6 months Joe Biden was in office. And there are signs that inflation is getting worse. Real wages are not even keeping up with the inflation rate, which means Americans in their paychecks, which may look bigger because they have a bigger dollar amount in them, are actually buying less. And millions of people are now struggling to even afford food. Let me point this out. Grocery prices are up 13.5%. They have not gone up that much since 1979 when Jimmy Carter was president. And yet, when it comes to the economy, Joe Biden, I guess, says things are just fine. Take a listen to this.
What can you do to prevent a recession?
Continue to grow the economy. And we're growing the economy. It's growing in a way that it hasn't in years and years.
Now, 60 Minutes and Scott Pelley. I have to say congratulations for landing an interview, the first interview in more than 200 days. That they actually pulled their punches in those questions. The economy is already in a recession. The economists point out we have seen 2 quarters of negative growth. That is 6 months of negative growth. The economy is not growing, and yet Joe Biden, president of the United States, sits right there and tells Scott Pelley, we're growing like we haven't in years and years. Yeah, we're growing backwards. He says, you know, the fact is we are in a recession. And then there's the really critical question of Joe Biden's mental fitness for the job of president. At least 60 Minutes brought that up last night.
Some people ask whether you are fit for the job. And when you hear that, I wonder what you think.
Watch me. I mean, honest to God, that's all I think. Watch me. If you think I don't have the energy level or the mental acuity, then you know, that's one thing. It's another thing of just watching and, you know, keep my schedule.
Keep my schedule? Do you realize this guy spent more than half of last year, and he's already spent more than half of this year, at his beach house or at his home in Delaware? He's been on vacation over half the year. How many working Americans get to do that? And when you actually do what Joe suggests, watch him and listen to him, we've been doing that. It seems very much like a family member with Alzheimer's or dementia. Listen to this sampling.
Best way to get something done, if it holds near and dear to you that you like to be able to, anyway.
From Charlotte. Another line going from in Florida down to Tampa.
Of Putin's kleptocracy. Yeah.
America is a nation that can be defined in a single word. I was going to put him.
The idea that
Los Angeles and what am I doing here?
For two reasons. One, to...
And then there is two. He just stares off into space. Now, I'll point out, they also brought up the issue of the border. And the old Joe Biden, let me tell you what the old Joe Biden was saying 15 years ago.
Ladies and gentlemen, no great country can say it is secure without being able to control its borders. Period.
Now, but Joe Biden and Kamala Harris today deny that seeing millions of illegal aliens flow across our border in the last 18 months illegally are signs that we have no effective border for our country. Listen to what she said.
We're going to have 2 million people cross this border for the first time ever. You're confident this border is secure?
We have a secure border in that that is a priority for any nation, including ours and our administration.
Now, if there's anybody not quite as dim as Joe Biden, it could be Kamala Harris. And then just a few weeks ago, Joe Biden used the excuse of a national emergency from COVID and the pandemic to justify ordering $500 billion in loan forgiveness for college students who don't want to pay their debts. The HEROES Act passed in the wake of 9/11, that gives him the power, but only if we're in a national emergency. So 60 Minutes asked him, are we still in that emergency?
Mr. President, first Detroit auto show in 3 years.
Yeah.
Is the pandemic over?
The pandemic is over. We still have a problem with COVID. We're still doing a lot of work on it. But the pandemic is over. If you notice, no one's wearing masks. Everybody seems to be in pretty good shape. And so I think it's changing, and I think this is a perfect example of it.
A perfect example of the fact that he no longer has the national emergency to justify giving up $500 billion on behalf of the American people. Coming up, the invasion of illegals in Martha's Vineyard and its ties to the Pacific Northwest. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Well, the Pacific Northwest played an important role in the great illegal alien airlift from Florida to the island of multimillionaires Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts, a Hillsborough aviation company that now has ties to a location in Florida, provided the planes that carried 50 illegals to the island home of celebrities like Barack Obama. Vertol Systems provided the charter flights, and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis warns there may be more coming. I certainly hope there will be. The 50 border hoppers are a tiny fraction of the literally millions of illegals who've come into the United States, crossing a border that President Joe Biden still insists is under control. This past weekend, the official report from Biden's Border Control Agency says 4,300 illegals crossed into America just this past weekend, and fewer than 900 of them were turned back. Joe Biden's Homeland Security Department confirms that Venezuela has been using the excuse of an open border in America to empty its prisons of violent criminals and send them north into the United States. Joe Biden is using this invasion for political purposes, and I hope it blows up in his face if it hasn't already. If you're worried about your family's safety, you have to vote. If you think your kids' classrooms are too crowded, you have to vote. If you worry about a country without enforced borders and a Congress that refuses to act and do its job, you got to cast a vote. The siege of Martha's Vineyard may be just the wake-up call that America needs to save itself from the evil plans of a truly demented president. By the way, if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. There's a group out there, and it started in Great Britain, but it is called the Tire Extinguishers. Yeah, they probably spell tire with a Y. That's the way they do things in the UK. But apparently they've turned up here in the Pacific Northwest. And I got a note about it from Chuck Weiss, who said, Lars, attached is the leaflet these crazy criminal nut jobs are placing on SUVs after deflating the tires, not slashing them, but simply letting the air out of the tires on a vehicle to try and stop the owners from driving them. I read this on Next Door Neighbors from a post by Amy Bursalem, who 4 days ago was in downtown Portland and had the tires on her SUV deflated so she couldn't drive home, and the attached leaflet was placed on her car's windshield. I didn't hear a thing about this on local media, TV, or radio. I'm guessing the mainstream press is too embarrassed to admit that one of their own types is doing something as nutty as this. Maybe they agree. Public education is absolutely responsible for this. Today's kids are being systemically brainwashed by the education system on climate and by high school. They are foot soldiers for this Marxist movement, and we see them engaging in ridiculous climate strikes in high school, where they cut class with teacher approval. They block traffic as they march downtown across a bridge and then get treated to a paid lunch sponsored by OMSI. The whole system is broken, and it needs a thorough overhaul, signed Chuck Weiss. I looked at the website of the Tire Extinguishers. He's absolutely right. These are people who are taking vigilante action, going out and letting the air out of people's tires. It, for the most part, it's going to inconvenience people severely when you find out that all four tires on your car are flat, but I'm not sure that they could even be said to have caused a crime or committed a crime, which means they're not likely to get much action from the police. It just means that people are going to be attacked. You come back and find your tires flat and you can't get home. Doesn't make any sense. It is vigilantism, and apparently it's going to be allowed. If any of you have been victims of this, send me an email, talk@LarsLarson.com. Janet Gresham, or Janet writes in from Gresham, Lars, how is it the U.S. government can transfer illegals in the dead of night by planes to cities around the country and be okay with it, but when it's done in broad daylight on buses sponsored by states, it's wrong? Only through active reporting do we know the government is doing with the illegals, signed Janet. And by the way, people keep sending me pictures of large, unlabeled buses turning up here in the Pacific Northwest, and they offload people who might be illegal aliens brought up from the border. But I tell people, unless you could track down the license plate number, then run that, find out who chartered the bus, and then trace that back to some kind of government contract, there's almost no way to prove that that's what's happening. Then I got this question from Susan, our question of the day. Hey, Lars, have you shopped at a Fred Meyer recently for wine? I do like to have a glass when cooking and sitting down for dinner. Today was the second time I was asked for my ID in the checkout line. The clerk took my ID out of my hand and scanned it. I asked why, and the clerk really didn't have an answer. I got home, I was still miffed about it because I don't know what or who Fred Meyer is giving my information to. I called and talked to the Tualatin store manager. He said it was a Fred Meyer corporate decision to do this, but couldn't answer my question of why. I did call our local Safeway and spoke with the customer service rep, and she said Safeway is not doing that yet. What gives? Who and why are we being tracked for our beer and wine purchases? Thanks for all you do. Signed, Susan. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
The way has been paved by Trademark Paving. Just pave it. Serving Southwest Washington.
Well, I'm going to give today's Daily Grill not just to some of the students, not all of them, but some of the students at the University of Oregon, but also the university itself. Consider that Oregon's taxpayer-funded universities are usually centers of progressive indoctrination. And yet, what happened over the weekend? Maybe that PC woke stuff isn't all it's cracked up to be. Oregon apologizes to BYU fans for a profane anti-Mormon chant. They used the F word and then Mormons, and it was ugly. The University of Oregon and its student section have apologized to Brigham Young University fans after they were subjected to an offensive chant during Saturday's football game. A video of the chant was posted on social media, prompting Utah's governor to tweet, "Religious bigotry alive and celebrated in Oregon." I thought the place was, especially the universities, were woke and politically correct all day long, but apparently not. Today's best email, you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Mobile Joe's RV Collision. Get back on the open road and back to your adventure with Mobile Joe's. No body damage, too big or small, collision or paint repairs, Mobile Joe's RV Collision fixes them all. David Z writes, "Lars, I've been in Seattle only intermittently since 2019, but I visit at times. I don't know if the following is a result of the reduction in police numbers or a gradual increase in the homeless. However, there are definitely some Seattle bus stops in which the majority of people in the vicinity of the bus stop seem to be homeless or ne'er-do-well troublemakers, willing and able to harass and threaten people who are at the bus stop catching a bus. A few weeks ago, I was at the bus stop at 4th and Pike. I was threatened by some homeless people and shortly afterwards got on the bus. While on the bus, another fellow said he would have helped protect me, and the homeless people had been threatening him as well. It used to be this bus stop was composed of people waiting for the bus, and maybe at times there would be one person begging with a sign. Now, at least on the weekends, some of the homeless or drug abusers and others outnumber those waiting for the bus 3-1 or more. This is probably not a good situation." Signed, David Z. And David, I'd have to agree with you. Glad to be with you on a Monday. Always glad to get your phone calls and emails. Coming up, let's talk about election integrity and the Seattle Times claim that some of the proof is just pure bunk. We'll get to that next. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, you're certainly welcome to at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. If you listen to this show, you understand that I've taken a firm position on the 2020 election and other elections even since then, and said that there are serious problems with America's election system, which, because the Constitution is actually designed and set up for the most part by the states. The federal government has a relatively minor role in deciding how elections are held. States make most of the decisions. And yet, if you tell people, well, you know, there are questions about the 2020 election, you immediately get labeled as an election denier. They use a term that traditionally is only used with people who deny the Holocaust to suggest if you're denying this, you're just completely crazy. Well, I don't think that Hans von Spakovsky is crazy. He's a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. He maintains a great database of election cases involving election fraud. And yet the Seattle Times has effectively labeled what you have said, Hans, as lies. And I wanted to give you a chance to answer that charge from the Seattle Times Daily Dead Fish Wrapper. Hans, are you there? I was hoping he'd be there. Let's see. Maybe. Oh, I see what happened. There we go. Hans, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
So the Seattle Times says that these are lies. Now, they say former President Donald Trump's lies about stolen elections. And then they suggest that's where the Heritage Foundation places the state of Washington in its election integrity scorecard. Well, you're involved in that. Would you mind explaining why the state of Washington doesn't do very well when it comes to election security?
Well, I have to admit, I was kind of laughing as I read their editorial, because they spend almost no time actually going through our analysis. We have 47 different criteria by which to judge a state, and Washington fails in many of those criteria, which is why they're ranked 45th in the country. And I'll just give you one quick example. Remember, Washington State is a sanctuary state. They, in fact, tell all of their officials, you can't do anything to inquire about the legal status of someone, whether they are an alien who's legally in the country. Not only that, but they issue driver's licenses to people who are in the country illegally. So what do they have in place to make sure that people who are aliens aren't getting registered to vote? You know, they brag in the editorial about having automatic voter registration, which means they're registering everybody who gets a driver's license. But since they're not allowed to inquire about an alien status, how are they ensuring that aliens aren't registering to vote? Well, that's a good question, and they don't seem to have any interest in doing that.
And that's just one of the ways in which you've scored Washington State. So their answer to you is simply to say that these are lies and that they falsely implicate the state as being one where elections are not necessarily secure.
Right. And they, like I said, they don't deal with any of the other issues we raise. And look, anybody who wants to know what we're talking about, all you have to do is go to our election integrity scorecard at our website, and we give a complete summary of every single piece. I'll give you another quick example of this. Look, another way to verify citizenship is to take jury information and use it with voter registration lists. If somebody's excused from jury duty because they swear under oath, well, I'm not a U.S. citizen, or I no longer live in the state of Washington, that information ought to be sent to election officials so they can see, is this person registered to vote? If so, take them off the list. Washington State doesn't do any of that.
Do you have any inkling as to why they choose not to do that fairly easy step to say, we understand that this person is illegally in the country, they've said it under oath, we should take them off the list? Why don't they take them off the list?
Well, I think you have to look at the ideology behind the fact that it's a sanctuary state, and therefore they have no interest in actually making sure the state complies with both state and federal law that says that aliens are not supposed to register and vote. I think they have no interest in enforcing that provision, and so they don't put anything in place that would allow them to enforce that provision.
I'm talking to Hans von Spakovsky, who's a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. And what really is contradictory and a bit hypocritical about this, Hans, to me, is liberals are always talking about voter disenfranchisement. So a classic example would be a Southern sheriff in decades gone by standing in front of the polling place with several of his white deputies intimidating black voters. Now, that'd be a classic stereotypical example where you simply scare people away. But if you're allowing people to vote and making it easy for them to vote, but saying, but by the way, there will be some people voting in this election who have absolutely no right whatsoever to vote. So if you vote for Trump and the illegal votes for Biden, then your vote is 100% canceled out. You're not just discouraged. Your vote is zeroed out.
No, that's exactly right. And, you know, they make much over the fact that they have this mail-in system that therefore sends a ballot to every single registered voter. Well, look, I have a colleague who grew up in Washington State. She hasn't lived in the state for more than a decade. Neither has her sister. They've done everything they can to try to tell the state of Washington they no longer live there, but her parents still receive ballots for the two of them every single election. And what does that tell you about just how good or not good the state is at maintaining the accuracy of its voter rolls and making sure it's not sending absentee ballots to people who shouldn't be getting them?
No, and when you consider the fairly narrow margin, I think you and I have talked about this before, in the battleground states, which really made the difference in the 2020 election, the total difference for those six states, I think, was about 44,000 votes. It might have been 50,000 votes. So the number of votes in each state was maybe 8 or 10 or 12,000 votes difference. So if you could shovel a whole bunch of ballots out into the environment, into the universe of available ballots, and then just a few of them get marked for one candidate or the other, and then dropped off at a ballot box in the dead of night, you can see that it doesn't take much to change the ultimate outcome of the election.
No, that's right. And this is particularly true, as you well know, Lars, with state and local elections. Those kind of elections are often decided by just a handful of votes, like the Compton, California city council race that was just overturned a couple of months ago by a judge. That city council race was won by one vote, and half a dozen individuals were found guilty of both voter registration and absentee ballot fraud, enough using mail-in ballots to have overturned the outcome of that election.
One thing I want you to do for my audience, Hans, you have an entire database that cites not just people accused of ballot fraud, but people convicted of ballot fraud, and it's quite
That's
a number.
Right.
So when people hear, well, this is relatively rare, where can they find the actual list and how many different both either accusations or convictions are there on that list right now?
Well, we only put in proven cases. We now have 1,375 recent cases. We're following probably two dozen more prosecutions as they're ongoing. And all they have to do is go to heritage.org and under voter fraud, they'll find our database. They can click on any state and find the proven cases in those states.
So get a copy of that link and send it to all your friends who say there is no voter fraud. Forget about it. It's something that just happens so rarely. That is Hans von Spakovsky. You can find him at the Heritage Foundation. He's the senior legal fellow there. When we come back, I'll get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
They call us all racist, living in the South. But Martha's Vineyard makes the white supremacists proud. They had a bunch of migrants show up at their house. The first thing they told them was get the hell out. So rich white liberals are the enemy. They talk a big game, but it's plain to see. If you don't have a leaf blower, get out of the street. In Martha's Vineyard, the hate runs deep.
Yes, it does.
Well, Karen doesn't like illegal singing or dancing. She called the police when they walked past her mansion. We ought to send a million more and put them on the map. Cause you say that all are welcome, but we know you're full of crap. Rich white liberals are the enemy. They talk a big game, but it's plain to see. If you don't have a leaf blower, get out of the street. In Martha's Vineyard, the hate runs deep. DeSantis is the man and he's off to the races. Obama probably like to put him back in cages. If you want to know who's the worst of the races, you ain't gotta look too far. Because rich white liberals are the enemy. They talk a big game, but it's plain to see. If you don't have a leaf blower, get out of the street. In Martha's Vineyard, the hate runs deep.
That is the great Buddy Brown, and boy, does he get some tunes that are right on target. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and we proudly serve the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. Your phone calls and emails are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Vote in our Twitter poll. Should Oregon take the tampons out of the boys' bathrooms in schools? Now, this change was made by the Oregon legislature. It's called the Oregon Menstrual Dignity Act went into full effect at the beginning of this school year. And I'll tell you what, when you ask people about it, you say, do you need to put tampon dispensers in the boys' bathrooms, especially in elementary schools? And people say, what are you, crazy? Who would think of that? I said, well, the Oregon legislature thought of it. Well, now the question of whether or not tampons belong in the boys' bathrooms goes to the Oregon State Board of Education today. The seven-person body will weigh public testimony because a mom in Southern Oregon has launched a petition to scale back access to free menstrual products in public school. Written public comment on the Menstrual Dignity Act, which went into effect this year, this school year, runs about 4-1 to get rid of the law. Oregon has a law. It's similar to ones in Washington State and in California, but it goes a whole lot farther. Should Oregon take the tampons out of the boys' bathrooms in schools? I'd answer yes. You can vote any way you like. At Lars Larson Show on Twitter and LarsLarson.com on the web. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Let's go to John, listening in Eugene on the Radio Northwest Network and KPNW. Hey, John, what's on your mind today? Hello, John. John,
I'm John.
Go ahead, John.
I'm John, but I'm not from Eugene.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, then. What's your comment today or question?
Well, you were mentioning I was once a illegally registered voter in Washington State.
You were? How'd that happen?
Yes, I was. Well, I was a green card holder, and I was in the process of getting my citizenship. And I went to renew my driver's license. I go down to the depot, and the gal pushes a form across the table and says, you need to fill this in. And I looked at it and started filling it in, not knowing any different. You know, I'm just a dumb immigrant. What do I know? So I get to the end of it, and it's a voter registration form. And I said, you know, can I legally vote here? And she says, well, you need to fill in the form. They'll figure it out. So I'm expecting to get a rejection letter of some kind. But 2 weeks later, I'm a registered voter. So I called the office, and I said to them, I got this letter. I appreciate you registering me to vote, but I'm a green card holder, and I'm not. Am I allowed to vote, or is this just for local elections? They says, oh, my God. No, you can't vote. You're not allowed to vote. We'll cancel you off the thing. Thanks for calling. I said, wait a minute, before you hang up, don't you check these things? You know what the answer was?
What?
We've got no way of checking that.
Yep. Now that, and by the way, John, when they say they have no way of checking it, they have a very easy way to check it. They could check your Social Security card. Now, I know that as a green card holder, you have the equivalent of a Social Security number, but it identifies you as a green card holder. I have nothing against green card holders. I think people who come here and do it legally are doing it the right way. But there are a lot of different databases they could check to say, let's make sure that these people are registered to vote legally, and they choose not to.
Yeah, but even as a green card holder, you still have a Social Security number. So either way, they could check them both. Not a big
deal. They could, and what they could do is they could say to INS, they could say, we would like a list of all green card holders and their social numbers. If their numbers pop up on the voter registration rolls, then we'll simply know that person is not allowed to vote unless they've become a citizen just recently. They could do that. They choose not to do it. And part of it is the Democrats love to brag, we're going to afford the opportunity to vote to anyone. And if you ask them, I mean, I've discovered people in the state of Oregon who were foreign nationals. They ended up registered to vote. They contacted the elections department, which, by the way, when I contact them, they routinely say it's not possible. Nobody could be registered to vote if they're here illegally. Why? How do you know that? Well, because it says it's a felony to sign the form if you're not legally voting. They trust the honor system, and that's crazy. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Lars here with a question for you. Why is it that some people aren't as stressed out about the future as you'd think they would be? The answer? They're probably among the millions of Americans who prepared themselves with emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. If the worst ever happens, literally millions of American families are already protected from dealing with those empty store shelves. Is yours? Mine is. If not, go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now and grab some emergency food kits, at least one for every member of your family. These kits give you a wide variety of delicious meals that average over 2,000 calories per day. That's what you need. Everything stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. Order your kits right now by going to MyPatriotSupply.com. Your order ships fast and arrives discreetly in unmarked boxes. Listen, this is something you need to jump on now before the next news headline stuns the world. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. It's a Monday, and I'm glad to get to those calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. And our Twitter poll today on the Radio Northwest Network, should Oregon take the tampons out of the boys' bathrooms in schools? And if you say, well, what are the tampons doing in those boys' bathrooms? The answer is, because the Oregon legislature passed a law called the Oregon Menstrual Dignity Act, which says that you put tampons not just in the ladies' room or the girls' room, but also in the boys' rooms as well, because that's the politically correct thing to do. I would say, yes, take them out of the boys' bathrooms. There's a mom in Southern Oregon who has a petition before the Oregon State Board of Education today to have them consider, are you going to listen to the public on this one or just listen to the politically correct legislature? Today's Twitter poll is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. On Friday, on First Amendment Friday, we ask you this. Should two men accused of doing 36 arsons, including one who confessed to the crimes and the other caught on tape admitting to the crimes, should they get out of jail without bail? 96% of you joined me in a no vote, but a surprising 3% said, no, they should get out of jail. Now, I think that's kind of crazy. Now, Jeremy Baker is running as the Republican candidate for Washington State's 49th congressional district. Mr. Baker, welcome to the program, and thanks for your service in the United States Marine Corps.
Well, thank you, Lars. I really appreciate you having me on.
Did the Marines prepare you for electoral politics?
Yes. They gave me the courage to stand up to these people and to fight for the innocence that these people need. These people need a champion. Our citizens in Washington need a champion. And yes, the Marines gave me that courage, that strength of moral character to stand here and talk to you.
All right. So tell me this. What would you change if you get into the state legislature? What are the most, and now as a freshman, you're not going to have the kind of influence that people have been there for a long time have. Frankly, I wish people would go to the legislature, serve a term or two, and then go back to the real world. Most of them don't want to do that. Tell me what you'd want to get done if you got into the state legislature.
Well, it's really quite simple, Lars. We really need to get back to the basics here in Washington. If you look at what the Democrats have done, they've really basically have undermined everything that we have worked so hard to build here in our state. So public safety is a huge issue. So that would be the first thing that I would work on is bringing back law and order into our communities. One, we'd make sure that drug offenses, if you get caught committing a drug offense, you know what? You're going to get prosecuted for that. There is a consequence for those actions. We're going to work on giving the police officers the tools that they need to pursue these car thieves, to pursue the criminals that are victimizing us in the community. And we're going to work really hard at giving them the tools that they need to bring that safe street so our families can thrive again. And then obviously we're going to need to focus a little bit on the economy, because you are, I'm sure, aware that our economy is in deep trouble, and our politicians are just passing laws willy-nilly with their ideology and their agenda, their Green New Deal type stuff, where we are going to be burdened with high inflation, even more so than what we have today. I mean,
you know, it's funny, Jeremy. I don't know if you caught any of Joe Biden's interview, the first interview he's given in over 200 days. He says the economy is growing just fine right now. What do you think of that?
Well, to be honest, I think that's a bunch of malarkey because, you know, I work in the heavy industrial sector. I fix paper mills. I fix lumber mills. I fix steel mills. I understand, like, the economy on a high level. And a month ago, one of my customers that makes cardboard boxes over there in the Tri-Cities in Washington, they stopped making cardboard boxes because they couldn't sell any more cardboard boxes. And if we want to think about that and how this goes down the chain, those people that buy cardboard boxes have so many cardboard boxes because they're not selling anything. And so those people that would normally make the things that put in those cardboard boxes, they're going to be soon out of a job. I mean, FedEx just reported last Friday that we're in a global recession. Their margins have dropped. They are firing. They're getting ready to lay off a ton of people. No, the economy is in deep trouble, and we need real smart and critical thinking people in our state legislature to prepare our communities for the hard times ahead.
Tell me about the person you're running against for the 49th legislative district.
Yeah, so I'm running against Monica Stonier, who is the number three in the state House of Representatives. She is the House floor leader, and no bill goes through Washington in Olympia without her blessing. And so she is the one that has sponsored and passed the Comprehensive Sex Education. She's pushed through the Washington Climate Commitment Act. She's destroyed the parental rights with their bills where the parents no longer get to talk to their teacher about what's going on with their kids. I mean, she is the conduit for all the things that are going on in our state that we need to address.
Where can people find your website and perhaps give your campaign some assistance?
Oh, thank you so much, Lars. Yes, it's votejeremybaker49.com.
Very good. Well, I wish you well. I hope you get in there. And again, thanks for your service in the U.S. Marine Corps.
Thank you, Lars. Have a great day.
You bet. That's Jeremy Baker running for the 49th Legislative District. Let's start with a naysayer because we love naysayers. John, welcome to the program. Thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What do you and I disagree about to make you a naysayer today?
Lars, I just need to find $11,780 for my friend Steve Bannon so he can buy a plane. I mean, build the wall. So, Lars, John the Electrician here.
Oh, boy.
I know I mashed together a couple of Republican fraud cases, and the Mandarin Mussolini of Mar-a-Lago is the fraudounder in chief. He's the main committer of fraud.
Are you not concerned at all about election integrity?
Well, that's interesting, Lars. So after I heard your interview with the gentleman from Heritage Foundation, I went on the website, and I think I've been on there probably a couple of years ago with the same argument, and I noticed, first off, that it was 1,000 is the number. And then I went down through some of them, and I noticed that quite a few are Republicans. It's Republican fraud committed by a Republican.
And if it's done by either side, I want it prosecuted. But does that concern you that in just recent years we've had 1,000 cases of election fraud? Actually, I think it's closer to 1,300. But
this is over the whole country, first of all.
I understand that, but that's 1,300 cases in 50 states. That's a lot of cases of election fraud, isn't it?
That it would swing an election in a presidential election, hogwash. So it took
was 12,000 votes in Georgia, and there were a lot more than that that were cast illegally and cast not in compliance with state law. And that is, after all, John, what the Constitution requires, no matter how bad a Donald Trump impression you make. But, John, thanks for being a naysayer. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Let's talk about stock trading in the U.S. Congress coming up next. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@larslarson.com. If you've got a moment, cast a vote in our Twitter poll. Doesn't cost you anything. And no, it's not a scientific poll, but it can be habit-forming. You can find that at Lars Larson Show on Twitter and at LarsLarson.com on the web. I want to tell you something about criminals. Criminals are often stupid, but they are often very, very well informed. And I remember some years ago, I was talking to a police detective who remembered standing in an elevator, and there were two police officers who had taken a teenager into custody for stealing cars. And apparently this young man had stolen quite a number of cars. But the young man turned to one of the cops. Remember, he's under arrest. Now, you would think that that would be something that would be fairly intimidating. And he said to the officer, is it 12 cars you have to steal or 14 before you hit the number where they hold you in custody? And he was right. Turned out that there was a number. And the police had decided that they had so many people stealing so many cars that they had to set a benchmark and say, if you've only stolen 5 or 6 cars, then we don't actually hold you in custody because there are too many people doing that kind of crime. So they set a benchmark and said, when you get to 12 or 13 or 14, I don't remember the exact number, but the kid was absolutely right. And you think, well, criminals aren't aware of those kinds of things, are they? Let me give you a great example where America has this wide open border on the southern part of the United States, and we have literally millions of people smuggling people into the United States. Now, sometimes they're being smuggled in because they want to get a job here. Sometimes they're being smuggled in because, well, for example, Venezuela right now is emptying some of the worst out of its prisons. So they're getting rid of their most notorious criminals by saying, we're going to cut you loose, but you need to leave Venezuela. By the way, America has an open border. Why don't you head there? And you can imagine what could possibly go wrong if we have hundreds or thousands of really bad criminals, violent criminals, who are being turned loose and told, as long as you get out of here and you go to the United States, then you're out of our hair. Consider this, though. How well do the cartels know when you're dealing with trying to smuggle people across the border? It may be smuggling just to get people across the border so they can seek a job that pays a whole lot more. I pointed out to you that Guatemala, for example, this is the example that Kamala Harris keeps using, except she doesn't go into the numbers. She says, all we have to do is we have to address the underlying problem that's causing people to go north and cross illegally into America. Well, look it up if you don't believe me. But the average worker in Guatemala makes about $1,600 a year. And you heard me right. $1,600 a year is the average worker's wage. Do you suppose that at almost any job you could find in America, say landscaping or working in fast food or any kind of job you could find, would pay more than $1,600 a month? It might even pay $1,600 twice a month. And there are certainly construction jobs where an illegal alien could make $1,600 or more a week. So if the underlying problem is that it takes you 1 year to make $1,600, but if you come to America, you can take down that kind of cash very, very quickly. Can you imagine if you could sneak across the border into Canada, let's say if you were so inclined, and you knew, you said to your wife or your husband, by the way, if I sneak into Canada, I can make in 1 month the same amount of money I'm making every year here. So you're making 12 times as much money. How powerful would the incentive be to sneak into Canada, especially when Canada says we don't care? And then consider this problem. This is where it comes to what the criminals know and how they put it to their use. Epoch Times is reporting that women are being caught over and over and over again smuggling illegal aliens into America through a county called Kinney County. That's in Texas. And what happens is they get a long-term get-out-of-jail-free card because the Kinney County Jail is not allowed to house women. And they say many of those caught smuggling, and they may be smuggling children for illicit purposes. They may be smuggling drugs. They may be smuggling just plain old illegal aliens. The sheriff's deputies say that female drivers they catch will often tell them, quote, you can't arrest me. You don't have space for females. Now, a few of them have been transported to another county called Kerr County, but it takes the deputies 2 hours to drive each way. So if you take a woman into custody and you want her to actually be held in the jail and you can't put her in the Kinney County Jail and you want to drive her to the Kerr County Jail, you're going to blow up the better part of an entire shift just driving the person to a county where she can be held. And they say when we do find jail space, they cry all the way to Kerrville. They say, you're not supposed to put me in jail. They told me I wouldn't go to jail. The female smugglers started to be released on personal recognizance, and the smuggling networks have now been using female drivers more often. Now, since we've started to find a place to put them, we're catching 17-year-olds again. You see, in Texas, a 17-year-old is considered to be an adult when it comes to crimes, but the nearby overflow detention facilities will only take those ages 18 years and older. So they figured out, come in as a female, you won't get sent to jail in almost all cases. Come in at age 17, you're not going to be held in jail. And the smuggling charges, which in Texas are a third-degree felony, are still filed against the female drivers, but they get to go home. Now, oftentimes, they hang on to the vehicle that they were driving. But consider this. In Kinney County, 2 years ago, there were 64 cases of smuggling where they took somebody into custody. And then last year, there were 67 cases. Do you know how many cases they've had so far this year in one county in Texas? 3,045 smuggling charges during the fiscal year that ends about 10 days from now. So they've gone from 65 or so cases every single year to 50 times that number of cases. Now, that doesn't represent individuals, but if a smuggler is transporting 6 illegal aliens, they get 6 charges placed against them. The numbers shot up in August of last year. That's when Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, launched his Operation Lone Star Border Security Initiative that has boosted the region with state police and local prosecutions offices with staff from the Border Prosecution Unit. As of September of last year, Texas enacted a law that makes it easier to prosecute smugglers. It's now unnecessary to prove the driver was getting paid for the smuggling because in many cases, they're not getting paid. It's the cartels that are getting paid. They employ the driver. So if the driver doesn't get paid directly by the people he or she is smuggling, then you simply get away with the crime. So they've figured ways around America's ridiculous sets of laws, saying you can't house somebody who's under the age of 18. You can't house somebody who's female. This is a problem created by Joe Biden and the people who voted for him. And now when they find the problem turning up on their doorstep, whether it's Martha's Vineyard or Chicago, Illinois, or New York State, or in Washington, D.C., they all say, you can't do this to us. Well, yes, they can. And yes, he will, because it's to his advantage. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'll get back to your phone calls and emails shortly, but I want to get some information in front of you. Of course, last week's delivery, let's put it that way, of about 50 illegal aliens to the very, very tony neighborhood of Martha's Vineyard. I had to look it up because the numbers have changed so rapidly. The average home in Martha's Vineyard costs about $1.3 million, if that gives you an idea. Net worth of the people who live there is very, very high, and they include all kinds of celebrities whose names you know, most especially Barack Obama, who paid about $12 million for his seaside house in Martha's Vineyard. And when those 50 illegals showed up, boy, it just set the town on edge, and it grabbed the public's attention nationwide in a way that none of the other moves by Greg Abbott or Ron DeSantis, the governors of Florida and Texas, have up to this point. I think it was a purely effective way of bringing the point across that especially white liberals and rich white liberals, they talk a good game when it comes to all immigrants are welcome. Unless, of course, they're in our neighborhood, in which case we're going to work as fast as we possibly can to get rid of them. Tristan Justice is the Western correspondent for The Federalist. Tristan, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So this was amazingly fast for all the millions of illegals who've come into America since Joe Biden took the oath of office. These illegals didn't stay in Martha's Vineyard more than, what was it, about 36 hours, maybe?
If that, no, I mean, it was really interesting to watch, and I think most Americans picked up on this. What you have here is you have one of the most affluent areas of the entire country, majority white, liberal enclave of the country, bringing in 50, not even 50 migrants, it's 48 migrants.
48.
And the town flipped over. And so really puts into comparison, when you compare these border towns being swamped with 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 migrants daily, and yet Democrats continue to ignore the problem in D.C. and New York and the entire Silk Corridor. But now you put 48 in Martha's Vineyard, the entire town turns over. And so I think Americans are now starting to finally wake up and talk about the border crisis that we're seeing. And the irony here cannot be overstated.
Well, and what's crazy is, Tristan, right after it happened last week, a lot of us went online and we said, well, Airbnb shows almost 300 vacant rentals that you could have used to house these people. And the town collectively said, we don't have room for these people. I mean, this is the place where Barack Obama not so long ago staged a massive birthday party for himself and put up a tent that looked like it was about a 1-acre tent on his property and had either hundreds or thousands of his friends come for a birthday party. And a lot of us said, well, that tent would have easily housed 48 illegal aliens, but they couldn't get rid of these people fast enough.
Right, and those residents in Martha's Vineyard are the same people who lectured the entire country about diversity, about immigration, about bringing in the poor and the tired, and they recite the poem from the Statue of Liberty. And yet when these residents are brought 48 migrants, the entire town deports them within 24 hours. I mean, it's just remarkable. And yet you have, now you have all these other city mayors and governors now calling for the National Guard to come out and calling for federal assistance when they get maybe a few hundred migrants, and I think New York has a few thousand migrants over the course of several months. You have Eric Adams in New York planning to spend up to $300 million to house these 6,000 migrants who come into the Big Apple. Yeah, again, these Texas border towns are taking that many migrants on a daily basis, and yet you have all these residents from places like Martha's Vineyard lecturing the rest of the country on compassion.
Well, I guess there is one important point that I think they made, and that is, you know, when folks have said, well, why don't we use the U.S. military to safeguard America's border? That's part of what the military does. It can make a line anywhere in the world. I mean, we've had lines drawn in Iraq. We've had lines drawn in Afghanistan. And when our military is on that line, people don't get through it. And here's Martha's Vineyard. I know the rich white liberals who live on Martha's Vineyard. It's one of the whitest places in America as a neighborhood. They would cringe at the idea of using the military. And yet you were right, 48 illegal aliens, not 50 of them, who were sent there on an airplane by Ron DeSantis, who chartered the plane to bring them there. They didn't have any problem having the governor of Massachusetts deploy 2.5 times that number of National Guard, 125 National Guard members, to make sure that they corralled, rounded up, and quickly deported them from the island.
Deported them to a military base. I mean, again, the irony here cannot be overstated. And yet, you know, all these liberals are talking about compassion, how we need to care for them. Hey, I'll take a free flight to Martha's Vineyard. I mean, this is one of the nicest places in the country. You know, they're going after Ron DeSantis for trafficking and all these other types of allegations. And of course, I think Ron DeSantis is about to get the Trump treatment, where his political opponents try to deploy every type of law enforcement they can to bring this guy down. But it's just a perfect example of the rich white liberal not living up to the very things that they lecture the rest of the country on so self-righteously. I think, you know, out of all the memes that came out of this entire debacle last week, I loved the one with, you've got Homer Simpson holding up one of those snarky social justice signs that read, love is love, no human is illegal. And he kind of hides back into the bushes and then comes back out with a no trespassing sign. I think that perfectly sums up what's going on here. You have all these liberals who lecture the country about diversity, compassion, and inclusion, and yet when they face 3 dozen illegal immigrants, they send them right off the island with military help and send them to a military base.
Now, see, I think if Donald Trump was still president at this point, he might say, fine, we're going to have INS come to your island and we're going to question all the people who work as your, let's say, landscape people. I mean, if you've got a multi-million dollar home, you've got to have the landscaping done. And I'm guessing the owner doesn't get out there with his lawnmower and his weed whacker to do it himself. And how many of those people that they use as household staff, you know, maids, butlers, landscaping, cooks, drivers, and everybody else, how many of them are legally in the country, and how many of them are working on the cheap for these people who own these homes? I'm willing to bet there are more than just a few, and those, of course, are perfectly available. I also noticed that it wasn't me, but somebody else looked up the number of jobs that are offered up as available for anybody who wants the job. There are 50 jobs listed for Martha's Vineyard. It's a small community, but hey, everybody's got to get the dishes washed and they've got to get the lawn mowed, so they're willing to hire people for that. And yet they told these 48 illegal aliens that there's nothing for you here. There's no housing. There are no jobs. You need to get out of here.
Right, and those very people that you just mentioned, they're probably not even welcome to live on the island. They probably have to live on the mainland and commute to the island. I mean, you had this lady who is the management director of the shelter at the church these migrants are staying at. She gave this interview where she talked about how the island has such a housing crisis where the people who work on the island don't even live on the island because they can't afford it. Meanwhile, they've got all these massive mansions, Barack Obama's included, which, I mean, I think one mansion could house all the new arrivals who became their new neighbors for a brief 24 hours until they were rounded up and deported off the island. So, no, I mean, the hypocrisy here is incredible, and I wonder if maybe Democrats will start paying attention now to the very crisis that they've spent the last 18-plus months ignoring.
Well, wouldn't that be nice? Because the double standard of saying illegal aliens are welcome in America, that's what they said on the Martha's Vineyard welcome sign, that we welcome all, and that hate has no business here. And that's the actual official welcoming sign for Martha's Vineyard. And they say, unless you come to our neighborhood, in which case, could you please get out of here? Because we don't have people like you actually living here on our island. That is Tristan Justice. He writes about issues like that for The Federalist. Tristan, thank you so much. I appreciate the time. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. It's a Monday, and we're glad to take those calls at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. I'll get to your calls in just a moment. And I want to ask you this question, not entirely rhetorically. Why is union organizing at a modern-day peak in the state of Washington? I'll give you some examples. And how is Tina Kotek? Is she all hat and no cattle? She's running for governor of Oregon. We'll get to that next on the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and we serve the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. In fact, we just added an affiliate in Forks, Washington. But for the most part, we cover all three states with a blanket of coverage. Not that we're trying to hide anything. We want to be transparent as always. This segment of the show brought to you by NickShivers.com. Go to NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showing, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. Our Twitter poll today, should Oregon take the tampons out of the boys' bathrooms in schools? They were put there by passage of what's called Oregon's Menstrual Dignity Act. And some parents are saying this is absolute insanity to put tampons into the boys' bathrooms all the way down to elementary school. I'd say yes, take them out of the bathrooms. I hope the State Board of Education actually listens to what the people have to say about this. Today's Twitter poll can be found at Lars Larson Show, and it's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. To your calls now at 866-HEY-LARS. Let's go to Tom. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to comment on Greg Abbott's and Ron DeSantis' stunts about shipping these migrants off to Martha's Vineyard. It's a sick and twisted revealing of what the Republican and MAGA hearts are. Very dark and sad and pathetic.
Why is it dark and sad and pathetic to bring an attention to public view that the people, let me finish the question before you answer it, unless you know what I'm going to ask you. The people in liberal northern cities talk a great game about wanting to welcome what they call migrants, which they include illegal aliens in that. Shouldn't they have it put in their face that this is causing real damage to a lot of communities, especially those in the American South and Southwest?
Lars, yeah, what damage? You got these people coming in, working in fields, harvesting vegetables that nobody will ever do, hanging drywall that nobody will ever do.
For $60,000 a year, $30 an hour, hanging drywall, there are plenty of Americans who hang drywall, who hammer nails, who frame buildings, who pour concrete.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Yes, I do.
You don't
because,
know
Tom, even on the official surveys by the National Labor Statistics Bureau and the State Labor Statistics Bureaus, no, but what I'm telling you is the majority of people working in construction are still American citizens or they are green card holders. There is a percentage of illegal aliens. But when you tell people, we're going to give your job away to somebody, and you're assuming that these people crossing the border are going to go to work in those jobs and not engage in
you
criminal activity.
You just saying that these people were working.
Who was working?
A little while ago, you said these people were working.
No, I said some of them are working. Some of the illegals are working, and they're working at jobs they shouldn't have, because if you come in illegally, you have no right to work any job in America.
You're not going to find an average white person to do that work, Lars.
I think you are a bigot.
It doesn't exist.
I think you're a bigot, because there are lots of... I know people who frame houses. I know people who pour concrete, and they are legal citizens of the United States. They are not illegal aliens.
Are they white?
Some are white, some are Hispanic, some are black.
Some are white. The majority of them are...
Well, the majority of the country is white, Tom. I mean, that's like saying if I'm in a country where the majority of the people are white, then a majority of the people doing a particular job are white?
It's a sick and twisted attitude towards...
Why is it sick and twisted to tell these liberals who say we want illegal aliens unless they turn up in our neighborhood, in which case we'll use the military to remove them?
You're playing politics with people's lives.
You know what? The people who are playing politics are people like Joe Biden, who says, come on into America. Come in illegally. Come in and steal resources. Put your kids in our schools. That's playing politics with people's lives. Let's go to Ann in Klamath Falls. Hey, Ann, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Thanks for having me, Lars. I had a funny instance happen all the way through my life as far as voting goes and putting my name on the register. I got my driver's license at 16, at which you could not register a vote in California. You had to wait till you were 18.
Right.
At 18, I went to register, and they said, oh, you're already registered here. And I said, what? Yep. I'm already registered here. How did I get registered? And they said, well, your name is Anna Otter, isn't it? And I said,
They probably had your social security and your date of birth as well, didn't they? Don't say that on the air.
Yes, and it was my grandmother that they had listed to vote. And I said, you changed that now. She died when I was 14, and I want to register now under my name, Anna Marie Otter. And so they changed it. Well, the problem did not end there. When I got married in 1960, of course, I had to change my voting registration because of taking my husband's last name as my name. So we went through the whole rigmarole again. And this all happened in California.
Yep.
And we got that all straightened out and everything. And we went on through our married life and thought everything was just fine. Well, we found out, and I didn't find out until, it was 2006 when my husband passed away and I went to file for his portion of my Medicare or his Medicare.
Anna?
Oregon Utility Notification Center wants to remind you that whether you're planting a tree, building a fence, or just making improvements around your farm or home, click or call before you start your work to get the area marked. Then dig safely and avoid contact with buried utilities. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones. Know what's below. Call before you dig. For more information, visit us online at digsafelyoregon.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. It's a Monday, and you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network, proudly serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for the past 22 and a half years. And we have a lot of ways for you to take part in the show. Now, I'm going to talk to Lee Finney here for a moment, but if you want to call, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. And naysayers always go to the head of the line. Sometimes they don't even tell me they're a naysayer. You can also email. I get a lot of naysayer emails that way. Talk@LarsLarson.com. You can vote in our Twitter poll. You'll find that at Lars Larson Show on Twitter. And if you don't like Twitter, go to my website. That's LarsLarson.com. Lee Finney heads up the Education Department at the Washington Policy Center. Lee, it's good to have you back.
Oh, thanks so much, Lars. Great to be back with you.
You know, just to add a little delicious irony to this, we're going to talk about teachers in Washington State trying to use some brand new numbers to hide their failures during the COVID pandemic, which our commander-in-chief just announced is over as of last night. Joe Biden says the pandemic is over, except when he needs it to justify, say, paying off a bunch of student loans, which he can only do if there's a national emergency. But the thing I noticed about Washington State teachers, you know, there's an outfit called Wallet Hub. They keep an eye on financial things. They now say that Washington State is the fifth best place in America based on numbers and money to be a teacher. And yet you'd think if you're getting paid that well, that you'd actually want to produce a solid product and not have to hide your failures. But fifth best place in America to be a teacher, Washington State. And yet what are we finding out about the numbers they're trying to use to justify what's happened to kids over the last 2 years?
Well, the top education official in the state, Chris Reichdahl, has taken the failing numbers and tried to put a gloss and spin on it that is the opposite, the exact reverse of the truth. Okay, so we just got new state numbers reported from the spring test scores, which show that 60% of students in Washington State, the schools have failed to adequately teach in math. 50% of students are failing to learn English adequately. Yet the state superintendent has spun these test scores as showing 70% of students were proficient and or made progress from the previous test scores, which shows you the game they're playing. They have included children making progress as equal to children passing tests.
Now, hold on. Just so people understand this, if, let's say I take a class, and I've taken classes before, I mean, even as an old guy like me, I sometimes take classes or, you know, things like that. And you said, well, last term, Lars, you got a 20% on your scores, but this term you got 30%. You'd say, well, 30% right out of 100, okay, that's failure. And say, no, I've shown 50% progress. If I've gone from 20% to 30%, I mean, I only got high school math and a little bit of college, but if I went from 20% to 30%, I made progress. In fact, I made 50% progress. I moved from 20% to 30%. This is the kind of nonsense that Chris Reichdahl is trying to use?
Yes, it's exactly. You describe it perfectly. That's exactly what he's trying to do. Remember, from the fall 2021 test scores showed that the schools had failed to prepare 70% of Washington students to pass the state test in math. And now, in the intervening time since then, in the spring scores show that 60% of students have failed to pass the test in math. So he calls that an improvement. He calls it promising results. Promising results when 60% are failing, please. That is not the way leaders should to be talking. They should be exhorting teachers and students to work harder to catch up from the pandemic learning loss. They should actually be speaking about giving money directly to families so they can educate their children with the help of private tutors. That's what a true leader who cares about the learning of students would be behaving. But instead, we have leaders that are spinning, using Orwellian terms, playing games with numbers to distort what's actually happening to the kids as a result of having the schools closed for 2 years.
Is Reichdahl just worried about keeping his own job, or is he just one of these true believers that says, I want to make sure that that the teachers, the unions end up looking good? I mean, it's hard to understand if the system is failing kids, as you point out, failed to teach 49.3% of students adequately in English and failed to teach 62.5% of students in math, you'd say to your bosses, the people, we're failing right now and I have a plan to fix it, or we're failing and I don't have a plan to fix it, whatever you want. But you've got to tell the truth to people. Who exactly is he trying to serve?
That is that's a great way to put it. A proper leader would tell the truth and say, we're failing. We have to help the children improve. But he is just defending a system that has failed in so many ways. He's covering up for it. He's representing the government schools that have let us down so badly during COVID and now after COVID. So, you know, I don't know what his motivations are. I just know what he's doing is not direct and not honest with the public.
Well, you know where I'd love to see him get his comeuppance? I mean, in Congress, you often see department heads hauled up in front of Congress and put under oath and then asked tough questions. Now, the Democrats are running things right now, so you don't necessarily get asked tough questions. But does the Washington legislature ever see fit to say, we should get Reichdahl up in front of us, and while the Democrats will toss softballs, we're going to ask some tough questions. Are you failing half the kids? And then keep asking the question till you get a sensible answer to that. Is that even possible in the upcoming legislative session?
Well, I've never seen it happen in those 15 years I've been following the legislature very closely. They seem to all be very close friends with each other. What I see happening, I don't see anyone being hauled up for failure to perform. I don't see that. In fact, I see the opposite. I see people like Reichdahl and superintendents of and local superintendents going to state lawmakers to cover up their failures and threaten to cut programs for students in order to get more money, more tax increases to fund their schools. That's what I see happening.
Well, except when you say more money, after the McCleary decision, you and I have talked about the literally tens of billions of dollars that have been shoveled into public education. Is there any reason to have to cut? It's one thing if you're running on a short budget, you know, an inadequate budget, say, well, we're going to have to give up the good stuff, but we'll cover the basics. But in this case, why would they be talking about cutting anything if they've had the effect of the McCleary decision, which put massive amounts? You can remind my audience how much they put in.
Yes. So we have increased public school spending by billions and billions of dollars in Washington state. We're now spending $18,000 per student on average statewide. In Seattle, it's $22,000 per student. This is a huge increase over the past 10 years. And so that's what I'm seeing is dishonest language.
Absolutely right. That's Lieve Fenech. She heads up the education effort at the Washington Policy Center. Lieve, it's always a pleasure. In a moment, I'll get to your phone calls and emails. Can you imagine paying up to $250,000 per child for unnecessary preschool, glorified daycare? That's next. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. This week, we're going to be traveling back to Washington, D.C. We're going to do 2 days of shows on our nation's capital, from our nation's capital, up on Capitol Hill. And it's part of Feet to the Fire. We've been going to Feet to the Fire for more than a decade now to try to remind members of Congress, and yes, even Joe Biden, that Americans consider the illegal alien problem a real problem. Now, I got a call from a gentleman earlier who said, well, you know, Americans won't do those jobs, you know, like hanging sheetrock. And I said, at $30 an hour? I mean, typical pay, $30 an hour to hang sheetrock, to frame houses, to pour concrete. It's good money. But you're telling me these are the jobs that Americans won't do? So then I get this call from Stephen. Stephen, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome to the program. What do you have to say to that gentleman who says Americans, especially white Americans, will not do that kind of work?
First of all, I have one thing to say right out of the gate. Pure bigot. I am a white American born right here in America. Several of my coworkers as well. Myself, I planted over 1 million trees in the state of Oregon. I have plenty of friends that pick berries, fruits, vegetables every season. And here I am today doing everything from pouring concrete framing, hanging sheetrock, setting windows, you name it. There's all kinds of Americans out there that aren't too lazy and want the government assistance pouring into this country. We would want our borders locked down to continue having these jobs for us out there.
I'd agree with you, Stephen. You know, it's been about 4 or 5 years since I talked to somebody in the nursery industry, you know, where you Oregon grows an awful lot of nursery plants. So when you go to the store and buy some, I don't know, you know, gardenias or buy some cypress or whatever to plant around your yard, you say, well, this comes from the nursery industry. It's one of the biggest industries in the Northwest. It's an amazing amount of plants that are grown for that kind of use and oftentimes shipped out of Oregon. And I was talking to a guy who represents that industry. And I said, what portion of your workforce is illegal aliens? And he was honest. He said about 50%. And I said, well, if half your workforce is illegal aliens, that means by definition, the other half are American citizens or green card holders. He said, that's about right. I said, well, if you can get half your workforce from among Americans, why can't you get all of your workforce from Americans or green card holders? And he really didn't have an answer to that. But when people buy this conventional wisdom that every crappy job in the world is done by an illegal alien, the numbers don't back it up. And it sounds like your direct experience doesn't back that up.
That's correct. And trust me, there are a lot of me out there. There's just not enough of us out there, if that makes sense.
I agree.
Because I feel this day and age, the government is pushing, well, it starts in the schools, really, but they're pushing our youth to laziness. You know, they want to give them everything for nothing instead of making them get out there and work. And it's really sad, to be honest, because, you know, we depend on our youth to continue our country the way it's ran for many, many years. And if they continue down this road, we're in big trouble.
I think we are, Stephen, because there's nothing. I mean, I've said to people, you know, if you've got a son or daughter and you say, well, what do they plan to do? Well, they're working construction right now. I said, it's a lot of hard work. You work with your back. But if you start out pouring concrete and then at some point you decide to hang out your own shingle and say, well, now that I've been pouring concrete for a while, I'm going to have my own company. You know, I'm a little bit older. I'll go do the bids and I'll hire young people just like I was to actually do the physical work. And I'll be doing more of the brain work in the corner office, even if the corner office is a single wide trailer on the edge of a construction site. There is nothing wrong with that kind of work. Thank you so much. I appreciate the call. Let me go to Mike. Hey, Mike, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm just another Steve construction worker, only my name is Mike. And, you know, I'm a union guy. I make $44 an hour. You know, I cleared
That's good over money, right?
Yeah, I cleared over $100,000 last year, and I know lots of people that want the job. And it doesn't matter what color they are, but I can tell you that it is leaning one direction more and more. And it's, you know, hard. And, you know, my kids, I have kids. I have my youngest one wants to go into the trades as an electrician. And those, you know, those are all great jobs. You know, and the thing I haven't heard anyone talk about either are construction jobs are one of the biggest employers of felons. So you're taking jobs away from those guys that are trying to get their lives straight.
Yep.
And I can, you know, attest to that personally myself. You know, when I couldn't find a job because I'd gotten myself in trouble as a young man, I created one and started a construction company and ran it for almost just about a decade before I went to work on the union side and went and learned something completely new there. And was welcomed with open arms regardless of my past.
And you know what, Mike? There's nothing wrong with that. I remember seeing I was doing the show from Texas one time a couple of years ago, and I saw as I was driving away from the airport, I saw a sign, and it was a construction company. I can't remember how they worked it into the name of the construction company, but it was literally a construction company made up of primarily former felons who were working in that company, which means, and you say, well, how could you have those people doing that work? You say, it's great work. It produces a good, solid income. And frankly, if you have a bunch of felons on your crew, they know what a good deal they've got. So when they see somebody who's maybe, you know, got sticky fingers and wants to start taking the construction tools home or taking them away from the job site, they may be the best watchdogs you've got to tell the boss, hey, don't trust this kid. He's going to disappear with your tools, because that construction worker knows those tools are his paycheck, and he wants to safeguard that paycheck. And the fact that they're a company, I wish we had some companies in the Northwest that actually said, if you've got a former if you've got a felony on your record, that's okay. You come to work for us, but you have to be honest now. And if you do that, we'll take good care of you. Let's go to Larry. Hey, Larry, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. I just wanted to kind of make a comment to that gentleman that called earlier about it being sick and twisted that some of our governors are sending migrants to Martha's Vineyard, which he probably lives there. But I wonder if he thinks it's sick and twisted that the current administration leaves the borders wide open, allowing fentanyl to flow in and killing over 100,000 American citizens every year.
Well, you make that. That's a great point to make. And Larry, let's add to that. What do you think happens with a lot of those illegals that have come in? Well, the Biden administration has put them on buses and on airplanes and has shipped them everywhere else in America. So you've got this double standard Democrat treatment that says if Joe Biden does it, it's okay. But if it's Ron DeSantis or Greg Abbott of Texas who are doing it, then it's sick and twisted. Well, what the heck's the difference? I mean, if you're an illegal and they put you on a bus and ship you off to some other sanctuary city, if it's a Democrat doing it, it's okay. But if Republicans do it to send a message about how critical this issue is, then it's not okay. That makes no sense to me. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And I wanted to start this before I talk to Carl Delfeld, who's a former U.S. Treasury official. I wanted you to hear just a few seconds of Joe Biden trying to shove one of the biggest problems he's got in front of him as president under the rug. Take a listen to this from the 60 Minutes interview last night.
Mr. President, first Detroit auto show in 3 years.
Yeah.
No, actually, that's not the right one. It was about
what
the recession.
What can you do there to prevent a recession?
Continue to grow the economy. And we're growing the economy. It's growing in a way that hasn't in years and years.
Well, I guess in one way it is true that the economy is growing in a way that it hasn't in years and years. It's growing in reverse. It's growing backwards. We've had 2 quarters of negative growth. That is 6 months of negative growth. That's what the economists call a recession. And frankly, I thought that 60 Minutes kind of pulled its punches a bit, saying, what can you do to prevent the recession that we're already in the middle of? Except they didn't ask the question that way. I might have if I had that opportunity, but Joe isn't giving interviews unless it's friendly media. Carl Delfeld, as I said, is a former U.S. Treasury official and representative to the Asian Development Bank and a senior fellow at the Hay Seward Center for Economic Security and author most recently of Power Rivals, America and China's Superpower Struggle. Carl, good to have you back.
Nice to be with you, Lars.
What do you make of Joe Biden's effective denial that we're even in a recession right now, saying we're growing? We're growing like we haven't in years and years.
Well, I'd say he's pretty good about growing debt and federal spending. You know, Republicans don't have a clean record on this either. I mean, we've added $10 trillion to the national debt in the last 5 years. And so essentially what we're doing is baby boomers are putting younger generations on a credit card.
Yeah, and unfortunately that credit card is going to be paid either by kids or grandkids or great-grandkids. What do we need to be able to do to actually make the economy of America vigorous again? And especially when we've got China just champing at the bit, wanting to take over and basically surpass the United States as the most powerful economy on earth.
Right. Well, my book, Power Rivals, is all about what you just mentioned. In other words, this decade, I believe, is going to be a critical decade for this China-U.S. rivalry, because China has come so far. Now, I don't know, football fans, go back to 2000. At that point in 2000, Chinese global GDP, China's GDP was 3% of global GDP. U.S. was 28. Now the score is 17 to 23. 17% for China, 23% for U.S. That's too close for comfort, and we've got to get our economy going. And one of the ways we have to do it is to get our supply chains and manufacturing capacity back to North America and preferably to the United States. That's critical because we're still feeding the beast. We still have U.S. companies pouring money into China, and we need to reverse that. That's probably the most important issue, aside from controlling our debt and spending, which is putting us at risk.
I couldn't agree with you more, but Carl, tell me this. You're not suggesting that we do this by government edict. You're suggesting we get American manufacturing back by changing the rules here so that America is again a friendly place to run a business or to make things?
Yes, and we need to do so many things. Basically, we're overspending and underinvesting. So what we need to do is provide incentives, tax incentives, do anything we can to get these supply chains back. Now, the market normally works well. I'm a market guy. I've always been a market guy. But in some cases, it doesn't work, and then the government's got to step in, like rare earths and rare metals, which I'm trying to launch a stockpile for private investors. That because of the cost structure, something has to be done. In other words, you can't give up rare earths and rare metals to China because it's in everything from F-35 fighters to an EV battery. So, but those cases are very, very limited. And for example, the semiconductor bill just passed. I definitely don't want congressmen picking which semiconductor firm should get money to build a fabrication facility in the U.S. like Intel basically is trying to do. U.S. companies can stand on their own feet, but they need a push. They need a push, and they need some incentive.
Well, let me ask you about the rare earths, because that's been an interest of mine. Mm-hmm. The fact is,
yes,
90% or better of those come from China or from other places on the planet. It's not because we don't have those rare earths here. It's just that the environmental regulations in this country are so tough that it makes it uneconomical to mine them here. Is that accurate?
That's partially correct. We only really have one mine, and that's the Mountain Pass mine in California. And it would take an hour for me to run through the story about Mountain Pass, which used to be called Molycorp. But essentially, it just was misrun. They added debt, and the Chinese basically over the last 10, 15 years have methodically and slowly built up a huge lead based on, you're right, much laxer environmental regulations, lower costs, and basically the government just focused on it. In other words, subsidized it and poured money into it, so that they do make about roughly 85% of the rare earth oxides. You know, MP doesn't make any rare earths. It makes the concentrate, and then it sends it to China through its partner. There's a 9% partner in MP to refine it, and then it just disappears into the Asian marketplace.
So, Carl, tell me this. I'm talking to Carl Delfeld, who's the author most recently of Power Rivals, America and China's Superpower Struggle. What would it take to hang on to the processing of that and do it in the United States instead of China? And again, I don't like government edicts. I'd rather have it done because the marketplace says, hey, it's more attractive to keep that stuff here. What would it take to keep it here?
Well, a couple of things are being done. Linus, which is the number two producer, which is an Australian company, has signed a couple of deals to come to Texas to build a refinery. They're going to bring the ore, you know, some of the ore from Texas. It's complicated, but some of the inputs, the raw materials, are not here in the United States. So that's what's being done. But it's even more complicated because once you have the rare earths and rare metals, you have to produce the alloys, which go into everything from aircraft to permanent magnets. And we don't make those in the United States either. So this is what I'm getting at. A big part of our industrial base has moved offshore and primarily to China and Asia. I mean, look at Apple. Apple makes all their, basically assembles all their phones in Taiwan and in China. So, you know, what do we need to do to get Apple to come here and make their iPhones and assemble their iPhones in Texas or in South Carolina or in Wisconsin, where I'm originally from? That's a tough one because the costs are higher. So part of it is that they have to do what's right for America. And part of it is tax incentives. And part of it is maybe jawboning a little bit, maybe putting a little pressure on them. But, you know, you can't force them to make their iPhones in the United States.
Well, I guess you could through tariffs. You could do that. I'm not a fan of tariffs. But, Carl, thank you very much. I appreciate the time. That's Carl Delfeld, former Treasury official and the author of Power Rivals. We'll be back in a moment. I'll get to your calls. It's a Monday, and it's the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@larslarson.com. Let me start with Walter in Olympia. Hey, Walter, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind today?
Yes, Lars. I wanted to share a firsthand account that's related to voter registration in the state of Washington.
Okay,
so in 2018, my wife and I went into the driver's licensing office to get our Washington state driver's licenses.
Right.
I'm a natural born U.S. citizen, got my license. My wife stepped up for her turn. She was a green card holder at that time, not a U.S. citizen. The driver's license official asked her if she would like to register to vote. My wife said, no, I'm not a U.S. citizen. Now, she was using her green card, which stated this very thing, to obtain the driver's license. Right. So the lady should have known that. She then did a few things, asked a second time. My wife told her again and added, it's not legal for me to vote. I can't register. The lady asked a third time. And so I chimed in and I said, look, we don't break the law. We're not going to register to vote. Do not register her to vote. And so there's an example. I have to wonder how many people go ahead and register to vote when they ask three times to do it.
Yeah, I can imagine that happening because, Walter, a few years ago, just a few, I got a call from a gentleman. His wife was a green card holder, and she was hoping to become a citizen one day. And she told the DMV, in this case in Oregon, look, I'm not a citizen. I can't vote. They went ahead and signed her up, and she gets this card in the mail saying you're a registered voter. And her husband called me to complain because he said the elections officials wouldn't believe him. So I called the elections folks. There's a guy by the name of Stephen Trout who I'd love to talk to because right before the 2020 election, he resigned unexpectedly and left the state of Oregon's employ as the elections director. And he said, no, you must be mistaken or they're mistaken. But he went ahead and checked it anyway because his assumption was we don't register foreign nationals to vote. And yet when he came back to me, he said, well, it turns out we did. And I said, well, if you accidentally registered her to vote, this man's wife, and she was concerned about it. She was being honest and said she didn't want to be registered to vote until she was a citizen, at which point you would probably embrace it. I said, if you did this accidentally, how do we know you haven't done it to other people accidentally? Or people who've even tried to game the system and aren't going to be honest enough to call up and call it into question. And he said, well, we just don't. I mean, this is the attitude that if you go through life saying there are no criminals there, if you're a cop and you just say my town is crime free, so I don't even look for crime. So guess what? If I don't look for it, I don't find it. And if I don't find it, then I can keep telling people that we're crime free. That's the kind of situation we're in right now. To your calls now. Let me go to Gabriel. Hey, Gabriel, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
I just want to remind everybody, Lars, that the Tim Sipple trial is starting tomorrow.
This is about election integrity?
Yes, sir. Yep. I'm part of Free Oregon, who is representing Tim Sipple in this case. I'm also part of the election integrity team for Washington County, which he is also a part of, which we've been working on for a number of years to try to get the Secretary of State's office to tell the truth about voting. They've already admitted in court that the machines are vulnerable, even though they're not connected to the internet because they have Wi-Fi capability. So this right. could be a very pivotal case here in Oregon with election integrity. And I ask everybody come down to the courthouse tomorrow, 9 a.m. in Hillsboro. The address is 501 North 1st Avenue, Hillsboro, Oregon, Justice Services Building. The courtroom is 405J. It starts at 9 o'clock. If you can get in, but come out there, wave your flags. The Secretary of State's office is trying to say there's no public interest in this. Please.
Okay. So let's show them the interest. And by the way, all you're asking is that these election records be made public, and the Secretary of State is fighting you on that, right?
Yeah, fighting a citizen of this state saying that you don't have the right to know. You don't have the right to know if the election was legit in 2020. This is for 2020's election. You don't have the right to know that. That's what they're telling us.
But the thing is, Gabriel, there are going to be people. I get called this all the time. Well, you're an election denier. And we've got a great set of sound bites of Democrats, including Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and Barack Obama and even Joe Biden, going back years, you know, calling into question various elections. But when you call the 2020 election into question, then all of a sudden they treat you as though you're in a separate category. And you say,
well, I would say to that, Lars.
Go ahead.
I would say to that, Lars, that all the people out there, we spend so much money on so many things, and our government can't prove to us that the election is legit. We send so much money to Ukraine, and they can't prove to us that it's legit, and even in a single county in one state. What kind
and
of
by the way, it has implications
that?
Not just for 2020, but for every single election. Because if we find out there are major flaws, and I think there are, and you're unwilling to look at them for 2020, that means you're not looking for them for any other year, and that's a big concern. The Hillsboro Courthouse tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., election integrity, and it is a significant case. You've got the Lars Larson Show.